FNR News with Louise Taffer on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Good afternoon. This is The Week That Was on FNR Football Nation Radio, your voice of football in Australia. As always, every Friday, I take a look back on all of the biggest headlines and stories. And what a week it's been in football. Let's get straight into it. The Independent Disciplinary and Ethics Committee have delivered their verdict in relation to the Newcastle Jets' Roy O'Donovan. Now, the MRP reviewed that incident on Monday and determined that O'Donovan had committed the offence of serious foul play in the A-League Grand Final. And the MRP have handed Roy O'Donovan a 10-match suspension, and this is for both A-League and FFA Cup matches, so whichever comes first. And, of course, O'Donovan can always appeal this. He has to do so, though, within 7 days. Well, what do you think? Is that too harsh or not harsh enough? Head to FNR's Twitter at FNR_radio and have your say. Roy O'Donovan handed a 10-match suspension. Moving on, it was announced last night that Italian legend Gianluigi Buffon will leave Juventus after 17 years. Now, tomorrow night at 11 p.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time will be his last ever match. Juventus are at home to Verona. Now, I'm going to go to the president of Juventus, who spoke first last night during the press conference.
President Andrea Agnelli, thank you. Thank you very much and good morning, everybody. Good morning also to our Vice President Nedved and to our General Manager Marotta and Mr. Paratici and Giorgio Chiellini that are also here with us today. So finding the words was certainly very, very difficult. So I would like to start with some numbers first that are really amazing in Serie A. He played 639 and 284. So basically 44% were clean sheets. So it means that in the goal, one match out of two, he saved goals. So certainly has a great record. 974 minutes and 480 times he was captain of the national team on 176 presence in the team. He won 11 championship, one Serie B, five Coppa Italia, one Coppa UEFA, and a European championship under 21, and especially he's a World Cup champion. So it means 26 trophies in 22 years of career. It means that with Gigi, at least with Gigi, with him, it was possible to take home one trophy. He's a very charismatic, altruistic person. He's very ambitious too. He's also shy at the same time, but he's also very loyal, he's transparent, he's honest and sincere, and he's a friend, he's the captain. He was in paradise, he also went down to hell, and he went back to paradise. These, together with Nedved, Trezeguet, Del Piero, Chiellini, and Camus, that we, people from Juventus, will be eternally grateful. 2017-2018 was a very long year and also exhausting, liberating, and I would say that Gigi probably expected it to be rather different, and in his head, in our mind too, the goal was to go to Russia to play the sixth World Cup and therefore becoming the only player playing six World Cups. Well, instead, this year, first had Italy, Switzerland, and then an injury that kept him away from the pitch for quite a long time. And therefore, unfortunately, his record of presence in Serie A actually decreased. And then he was also given a penalty against in Real Madrid that unfortunately didn't allow us to play the semi-final. And then here also scored a goal by Koulibaly that could have made us think we could lose the Scudetto. But then, as we all know, Gigi was in the goal in the Olympico Stadium, and then 4 days after he was able to win the fourth Scudetto in a row, the seventh Scudetto in a row. So these are fantastic figures, as you can imagine. I would say that this year Gigi has been the person that has been coming to my house more frequently, except for the members of my family. So we always exchange opinions, and we all shared the decisions that we have made. And so the events that I've happened this year shouldn't change the long-term planning for Juventus. So what we know nowadays is that Tech Chesney is going to defend the Juventus goal next year. That her last defender, last goalkeeper was Gigi. But before Gigi, there were people like Zoff and Sentimenti Quart and Peruzzi and Tacconi as well. So Gigi at the moment has proposals both for roles outside the pitch, as we usually define them, but also some proposals to carry on playing. Well, Gigi knows that he has my full support, whatever decision he wants to make. So today I just want to tell him one thing. Thank you. Really thank you from the deep of my heart for these extraordinary years. And please enjoy the stadium on Saturday, just like the stadium will enjoy you until the end. Thank you very much, Gigi.
You're listening to The Week That Was, and those were the words of the president of Juventus via the English translator. Now, the biggest news, if you're just joining me around the world, is that Juventus legend Gianluigi Buffon will leave the club after 17 years. Now, the president was saying despite Buffon leaving the club, it shouldn't change their goals. We'll hear what Buffon had to say in the press conference last night.
After this introduction, I would like, of course, to thank my president that, apart from his institutional role that he plays here at Juventus, well, for me, he's really something more than that, because in these years we really developed a unique relationship. We've always been very close to each other. We have shared all the important moments and decisions, and I can say that we have a true friendship. But it's really like this, and the factors that have led to all this to happen, I think, are those based on honesty and loyalty. And also the great struggle, the great fight against hypocrisy. And I would say this is the common element that has always united us in all the things we have done. And the fact that he's here with me today, together with the managers, with my agent, with Luca Casassa, and also Giorgione Chiellini, that will deserve the role of captain after me. Well, for me, it's a great honor and it's a great pleasure to be here. I'm really pleased, I'm really glad that you're here with me today, because, I'm not saying that obviously this is something necessary also in negative situations, but certainly you do, your presence is fundamental in order to convey important messages. And apart from all the criticism and all the polemical comments and incomprehensions, I have to really thank all of you. And I want to say this not just because I have to say this, but just because I feel it. So, considering all this, I would like to summarize, this day, that certainly is a very peculiar day for me, but it is also a day rich of great emotions, full of great emotions, but I have come to this day with great serenity and also happiness and great satisfaction. These feelings are the result of an extraordinary career, really wonderful, that I was so lucky and privileged to share with so many people that have really loved me and taken care of me. And I've always perceived this day by day. And thanks to this great love and support, I have fought and always tried to do my best. Well, after this, what else can I say? Well, on Saturday will be my last match with Juventus. And I do believe that it will be the best way to conclude this great, amazing adventure, to conclude it with other two victories that are certainly very important to me. And I will conclude being close and supported by Andrea and by the whole Juventus people. My fear was to come to the end of my adventure, to get to the end of my adventure with Juventus as a player that had probably broken down the engine, but I can tell you that it's not like this, and I'm really proud of the fact that up to 40 years of age, until next Saturday, I've been able to express, maybe not my best, but at least I've tried to express on the pitch the top performance up to your expectations, up to Juventus' name and reputation. And so this is my greatest satisfaction and reward, and that's why I'm here to say goodbye. But I'm very serene and happy to do this, because it's not something that should be taken for granted for an athlete, for a sportsman, to be in such a situation, to play for such a long time at such a top performance until the end. So it's not so obvious. And I would like to conclude by thanking the Juventus family and the whole club, because I must say that Juventus in 2001 took a talent, well, probably I'm not so neutral, I'm quite partial from this point of view, but I have to say that if talent was turned into a champion, was transformed into a champion, it's due to the fact that Juventus supported me and really encouraged me to take a further step in terms of mentality and mindset. And I fully believe that if I'm still here at 40 years of age and I can play on the pitch like I have done so far, it's just Juventus credit, and I'm very thankful to their mindset and the approach that is completely different from other places all around the world. So this philosophy that I have embraced, I've really assimilated it and interiorized it, and I'm sure that I will use it in the future as well. Also, after playing football, because that's the only way I know in order to obtain, to reach great goals and great achievements with the happiness and the same time that I've also suffered. I have struggled and really put our heart, my heart, in everything that I have done, regardless of money and fame and all the trophies. This is the best lesson I've learned from Juventus, and I will always be grateful to all of you forever.
You're listening to The Week That Was with Louise Taffer. And that was the translator in Italy at Gianluigi Buffon's press conference last night, where the Juventus legend announced he will conclude his time at the club on Saturday night when Juventus play Verona. 17 incredible years are coming to an end. Well, when Buffon signed for Juventus, Marcus Rashford was 3, Trent Alexander-Arnold was 2, and his soon-to-be Italian national team successor, Gianluigi Donnarumma, was just 1. Buffon didn't, though, say he would retire completely from the game. This is what he had to say on what he might do next.
Now, of what's going on, I'm not frightened. Of course, I have a certain level of fear, but the good one, a moderate fear that I think is normal for everyone when you make such a change in your life. But as I said before, I live for these things, and I live also to get out of my comfort zone and maybe trying to find some new adventures and challenges that are more complicated situation and complex that I don't know, and I would like to see how I can cope with them. And I think it's very important in order to grow up and also to see how much you can still improve. So I've never really been frightened of challenges. On the contrary, they've always been very stimulating. Should you be offered to carry on playing? So the club that will get in contact with you, or that maybe has already got in contact with you, so what should it offer you? I'm not talking about money, of course, but what would you like to be offered? Something that you have not won so far, or maybe just a different experience compared to the one you have had here? Well, no, actually, my considerations will be focused on the perceptions, so the perception of the importance that you might have in a specific project, and also the new inputs, the new stimuli. So, and then, of course, my physical shape, my physical condition, my fitness. Of course, there are many different considerations that need to be taken into account without really being influenced or affected by the great excitement or enthusiasm of that specific moment. So for sure, I'm not, as I said before, a person that actually thinks that is right to conclude the career in some other low-level championship, because I do like the competition, so I want to perform the top level. So in I could never live in such a context, and I would really feel comfortable with this kind of situations.
That's Gianluigi Buffon's press conference last night through the English translator. Now, it's widely expected Buffon may take up a two-year offer at PSG to have one last shot at winning the UEFA Champions League. Buffon announcing again, if you're just joining me, he will conclude his 17 years at Juventus on Saturday night. Now, that won't be a game to miss. Juve up against Verona, 11 p.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time. Buffon is also facing a UEFA ban for comments made about English referee Michael Olivier, who sent him off during the Champions League quarterfinal defeat to Real Madrid last month. And in reference to that, Buffon said in the press conference he was sorry for offending the referee, and he said if he saw the referee again, he would give him a hug and say that he should have taken more time with the decision. Buffon added, with the feelings, emotions and disappointment of the situation, he behaved in a way that was not usual for him. And after that match, he went beyond the limits with things he said about the referee, and he apologised for that. Some of the other comments Buffon said in the press conference was, Juventus without me will continue on winning, and I won't do a farewell game with Italy. I don't need any more affection. The best I could get was while I was with Italy. Again, so humble, a true legend of the game. Now, I'll never forget when I saw a video earlier in the year, and it was all these little Italian kids at a training session. And the coach goes to them, who wants to be a striker? And all the kids put their hands up. All right, said the coach. He then asked, who wants to be a goalkeeper? And none of the kids put their hands up. They all scrunched their faces and crossed their arms. Then in walked Buffon. And as soon as all the kids saw him, they jumped up and screamed like Santa Claus had just walked in with a whole heap of presents. The coach then calmed the kids down and said, so, who wants to be a goalkeeper? And all of the little Italian kids put their hands up, and they were jumping for joy. Absolutely incredible. As we go into a break with Buffon receiving a standing ovation in his press conference last night.
Oh, that's brilliant! Oh, that's wonderful! That's a great goal! Cahill, it's his day!
Now Carl Speltek, Ronaldo!
You just cannot write scripts like this.
FNR News with Louise Taffer on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
You're listening to The Week That Was, and good afternoon to wherever you're tuning in from. Earlier this week, we heard that Manchester City smashed more English Premier League records.
Flipped around by Romeo, and he's onside. Is he going to go for goal here, Tadic? He is, it's off the line!
I think Claudio Bravo is unfortunate in many ways not to give a penalty away. He's making it as hard as possible for Tadic.
Will there be one last chance for City to claim the 100 points? Jesus is in here. Gabriel Jesus has done it! And that is why City are champions, because they have that capacity to come up with a late goal when it matters. History makers!
Simply incredible. A 93rd minute goal to give Manchester City a 1-0 win over Southampton and 100 points. Finish on 100 points for the English Premier League season. They've broken so many records this season. It is quite remarkable. They've broken the most points, most goals, most wins, most consecutive wins, biggest title winning margin, earliest title success, most away win, best goal difference, highest average possession, most passes, we can't forget that, and most consecutive Premier League Manager of the Month award, Pep Guardiola. We'll hear from him now.
Yeah, on both sides were good. So what can I say? 100 points. So 50. We won 50 points at home, 50 points away. So it's massive. It's 100 points in the Premier League. So you cannot imagine. So it's a lot of points. Maybe this record will be breaker, but will be difficult to be breaker because there are many, and the team is going to do that. They have to do many, many good things. Because we spoke. So the reason why after win the Premier League, you know, to keep being focused is because we have the challenge for break the records. If not, you don't win the games. Your intensity is going down, and the opponents. But we won except Huddersfield. We won all the games because we had that target. Today was so complicated game, quite similar to Huddersfield game at home. It was so hot. It was the players suffered. Of course, Southampton is a physical, physical team. A lot of people defending deep, so it was not easy. We were lacking some moments. We were lacking the other ones. And the last moment, the quality from Kevin, the perfect movement from Gabriel, and the finishing, we could achieve something unique. No, because 100 points is a lot of points. A lot. Yeah. Now we're going to make our parade with our fans in Manchester. And after that, holidays, and I will see the World Cup, of course, in my home.
You're listening to The Week That Was, and that's Manchester City's manager, Pep Guardiola. Manchester City finished the English Premier League season off with 106 goals, 100 points, 32 wins, 4 draws, and only 2 losses. Well, staying with the English Premier League, we also found out this week that Liverpool's Mo Salah won the Premier League Golden Boot for the first time, having scored 32 goals for Liverpool.
This one is very special, to be honest. This one is very special because of Golden Boot. But, you know, as I said before many times, it's always in my mind to help the team to win the games. So now we are in the Champions League next year, and I won the award, so I'm very proud to win it.
Could you have possibly imagined on your return to the Premier League and your first season at the club that you would break the record in a 38-game season?
To be honest, it's always in my mind to succeed in England. It's always in my mind. When I came back, it's always in my mind to give 100%, to even more to success here. So, yeah, I had a great season. So, let's see. Because the goals is always help the team, but, you know, I'm trying to improve every year. I'm always trying to improve. So, I'm very happy, you know, I'm improving year after year. So, I'm very proud about that.
That's Liverpool's Mohamed Salah. Well, earlier in the week, we also heard that Aston Villa will be facing Fulham in the Championship playoff after Steve Bruce's side saw off Middlesbrough in their semi-final clash.
They have done it! 0-0 in the second leg here pushes Aston Villa into the playoff final. There's a pitch invasion all around us. The Villa players are hugging each other. The fans are hugging each other. The backroom staff are hugging each other. And now the mini celebration can begin. Book your flights, book your tickets, book your trains, fill up your cars. Villa are going to Wembley. A huge pitch invasion now as thousands pour onto the pitch to celebrate with the Villa heroes. Aston Villa will play Fulham for a place in the Premier League on Saturday the 26th of May. It's just over a week away, and 38,000 villains will be there at Wembley to see it.
Aston Villa, one last chance at Premier League promotion. Well, we also heard that David Moyes parted ways with West Ham following his short-term contract coming to an end, while Sam Allardyce was shown the exit less than 6 months after being appointed. Here's ESPN senior football writer Mark Ogden.
David Moyes and Sam Allardyce have both left the clubs today. It's no real surprise, but I do think it's slightly harsh on both managers. I know that they've not had the greatest of relationships with the supporters at Everton and West Ham, respectively. That applies to both clubs. Both managed the two clubs. But this season, certainly, Moyes and Sam Allardyce were brought in to keep their clubs in the Premier League after a bad start, after a managerial change, and they've done that. It now looks as though both clubs want something extra, which is understandable. They want ambition and they want to achieve things, but certainly from, so we'll take David Moyes in the first instance. West Ham have had, you know, many years of instability and up and down and expecting big things, and I think what West Ham need at the moment is to have some stability, to build a club, build a structure, get the scouting network sorted out, get the training ground sorted out. And David Moyes, for all his faults, he's a guy that at Everton built a club and built him into a strong Premier League club, and I think West Ham need that right now rather than a manager who will come in and be a celebrity manager. They don't spend enough money on players to be successful at the top end of the table. So I think David Moyes has done a good job, and he probably deserved the chance to stay and take West Ham to the next level, which is probably top 10 stability rather than top 6 challenges. But I think West Ham want to be top 6 challenges, and they haven't quite bridged the gap yet. And in terms of Everton, you know, when Allardyce went in there, they were struggling for survival in the Premier League. He's kept them up, he's taken them to 8th. The football hasn't been great, but I think the one thing about Big Sam is that when he has a pre-season with a team, he gets them challenging for the top 10, top half of the table. So I think with Everton, it's slightly different in that the style of football that Allardyce played, and it became quite abrasive with the fans. I think he rubbed up the wrong way, and I don't think that relationship between the fans and the manager was sustainable. But I do think that both clubs have to be careful what they wish for, really. You know, they've got rid of two managers who are kind of well-known for keeping clubs in the Premier League, and they've brought in this uncertainty now whereby they'll bring another guy in who, again, might be in the same situation next summer.
You're listening to The Week That Was. And in the Europa League final, Atletico beat Marseille thanks to Antoine Griezmann's double.
A slip by Anguissa. Here's Griezmann. Atleti in front, and in front in a flash. Well done by Griezmann. And he's looking for the return. It is a wonderful finish. And it's a second for Antoine Griezmann. Majestic. Diego Costa on the move. With the strength to pull away from Rami, who's been able to get back into position. Koke. That's the finish. It's over now. And it's Gabby who gets the goal.
And this is how Atleti's win over Marseille will affect the revamped UEFA Champions League pots for next season.
What does this mean with regards to Atleti winning the Europa League, with regards to Marseille not winning the Europa League? What does this mean for the Champions League next season? So what this means is, as Europa League winners, due to the revamped format of the UEFA Champions League, the Europa League winners directly go into the UEFA Champions League and directly go into the UEFA Champions League as a pot one side. So what a pot one side means, for those if you're not aware, is that in the draw, they will be in pot one alongside the respective champions of all the top domestic competitions. So we know who they are: Manchester City, Juventus, Paris Saint-Germain, Bayern Munich, Barcelona, etc. So Atleti obviously finished second in Spain this season. They would have been in the Champions League anyway, but they are guaranteed now to be a pot one side, which means they will avoid playing one of those sides I just mentioned in the group stage. Huge win for Atletico.
Big bonus.
Massive bonus. What this means for Marseille, though, is that Marseille, due to the fact that the French Ligue 1 are the fifth-ranked European league, they only have 3 places in the Europa League, so in the Champions League, rather. So what this means is that Marseille, Lyon, and Monaco, now confirmed, only 2 of them will be in the Champions League next season, and currently Marseille very likely to be the one to miss out of those 3. So that could be a very costly defeat for Marseille financially. Obviously, they want to be playing Champions League football, may miss out altogether now, but there is still 1 round of football to go. It could be the most costly defeat.
You're listening to The Week That Was, and that was FNR's Adriano Del Monte giving us a bit of a wrap there. Now, it's only 27 days until the official FIFA World Cup. Now, France announced their squad last night, and it features a pretty top-heavy couple of names. Antoine Griezmann, Kylian Mbappe, Ousmane Dembele, and a midfield stoked with the likes of N'Golo Kante and Paul Pogba. Tottenham's Hugo Lloris is expected to start in goal in front of a backline that features La Liga standouts Samuel Umtiti and Varane, Lucas Hernandez, while Manchester City left-back Benjamin Mendy recovered in time from a long-term knee injury to also make the squad. But his teammate Laporte was among the talented players who will not make the trip to Russia. There are some players on standby, given their incredible squad depth. Kingsley Coman, Wiseman Ben Yedder is on standby as well. Lacazette, Martial, Sissoko, Sarko, the list goes on. Absolutely ridiculous. Well, last night on FNR, the editor of Mediano Football, Jakub Stalen, was on to talk about Denmark and give us a preview on them. But this is how the Danes were feeling when they were drawn to Australia.
I'm sorry, you guys, but we were delighted. it's well, we knew that coming, we were in the third pot, so it was all about number two and number four, and Peru. That well, it was considered one of the weakest teams in the second pot, and then Australia. Well, if you look at the rankings, well. The view was that we should be able to beat any of the four of the teams in the fourth pot, and well, we feel pretty confident that this is a good draw for the Danish team. It's all about the two first games. I mean, and they are the two teams that the Danish national the head coaches and his assistants are trying to map and analyze down to the smallest detail, because it's all about that. If you have six points coming into the French game, then well, that's just going to, as Åke Hareide said last time I spoke to him, he said that's just going to be fun. I mean, hopefully we won't need a result. Hopefully the French are through as well, and then nobody expects anything from that game. So all our focus is on the first two games. Well, I mean, we've always seen ourselves as the Brazilians of Scandinavia. You sort of hanging loose and not so stiff as the Swedes and not so boring as the Norwegians. And we were sort of like sort of this, well, South American, South European style, and with massive technical skills going back to the Laudrups and what have you.
You're listening to The Week That Was, and that was editor of Mediano Football, Jakub Stalen, on FNR last night, live from Denmark, talking up his country ahead of the FIFA World Cup. They're pretty confident about beating Peru and Australia, which will give them the best chance at moving out of the group. Of course, we don't care because we want to move out of the group. But this is one of the players who we know will be a big threat to us Aussies when we go up against Denmark.
Well, Christian Eriksen is, of course, the big, big star, and it's all about him. But, I mean, the difference, well, we depend almost too much on him because he scored so many goals for Denmark. And if you've seen Nicolai Jørgensen, he hasn't had the best season in Feyenoord in Holland. And Josef Poulsen and Andreas Cornelius, they play, but they don't score that much. So it's all about, can Christian Eriksen, can he score all the goals we need for Denmark? Because there is a fear that that's going to be the hurdle. Who's going to step up next? Because defensively, we feel very, very confident.
You're listening to The Week That Was, and that was editor of Mediano Football, Jakub Stalen, on FNR last night, live from Denmark. They're all pretty confident over there. And they want to beat Australia, but hopefully we will give them a run for their money. Well, moving on, and on the topic of squad announcements ahead of the World Cup, we heard Bert Vermaelen announce his 26-player squad ahead of the upcoming friendlies. And one big talking point to come out of it was Jamie McLaren, who was left out. He scored a hat-trick for Hibs against Rangers in that 5-all draw. And earlier this week at the PFA's Football History Conference, I was there along with former Fulham assistant coach Scott Miller. And this is what he had to say about Jamie McLaren.
Ultimately, being the head coach, you're employed to make these tough decisions. However, any decision based upon personnel as a coach is always based upon your system and structure and what you want to play. And you look at the identity or system that he's possibly going to look to play, especially in those first two friendlies. That system doesn't necessarily support a Jamie McLaren style.
Okay.
His penetration is going to come from wide areas as opposed to a 9 or a 10 centrally.
Yep.
And he wants his 9-10 to be that reliable platform playing in that 4-2-3-1 or a 4-3-3, depending on how you look at it. So I think the decision is based upon system and style and how he wants to find the balance of the team. I admire Jamie. I tried to manipulate his mindset before he joined Brisbane when I first took over at Newcastle, because I could see his development, and so could a lot of people apparently, because he was very difficult to sign at the time. He must be disappointed, there's no doubt, but he must recognise that he has made a significant step in his career, and Jamie McLaren's career won't be defined if he attends this World Cup or not. He's still a young player. He's playing at a football club now at a higher level than he ever has. He had a difficult year. Everyone's almost forgotten about his move to Germany, and he found it very difficult. The manager was sacked very soon after he arrived, which meant he had to move on. So what's he learnt about himself, right? So it's resilience. He's learnt a massive amount of resilience in the first 12 months of his European career, and this is another setback, but it'll be up to him how he defines the setback. And certainly from the reports suggesting he knew he wasn't going to the World Cup before, he certainly didn't look back. And he took action and utilised that as motivation and scored fantastic 3 goals.
This is the week that was, and those were some wise words from former Fulham assistant coach Scott Miller. Jamie McLaren's career won't be defined by going to this World Cup. Well, just some news that has come in this morning. Socceroos midfielder Tom Rogic has signed a new 5-year deal with Celtic that ties him to the Scottish Premiership champions until 2023. Well, I'm going to take a quick break, and more after this.
Oh, that's brilliant! Oh, that's wonderful! That's a great goal! Cahill, it's his day! Now, Carl Speltek, Ronaldo! You just cannot write scripts like this.
FNR News with Louise Taffer on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
This is the week that was on FNR Football Nation Radio, and good afternoon to wherever you're tuning in from. Well, moving on, earlier in the week we heard Football Federation Australia launched Future Matildas program. Now, it's established to provide a tailored training environment for some of Australia's most talented 15 to 20-year-old female footballers, and FFA has teamed up with the New South Wales government, the New South Wales Institute of Sport, Football New South Wales, and also received funding from the Australian Sports Commission to establish the Future Matildas initiative, which also seeks to bridge the gap between the current and future generations of Matildas. Now, I spoke to Matildas head coach Alan Stajic earlier in the week.
At the Sydney Opera House to announce.
Yeah, obviously quite a bit of time's been put into putting this together from various parties, but as we know, and I think we've spoken about before, the void that we had in our pathway, and not only in terms of age group, 15 to 20, but more so the time of the year in non-W League time, where we really didn't have anything for our female players to train full-time. It wasn't really an environment where they could prepare themselves on the field or off the field for that matter in terms of preparing themselves to be, you know, elite professional footballers, and hopefully this is a program we put in place that allows that to happen.
Matildas head coach Alan Stajic on FNR. Now, the Future Matildas program will help Australia build towards significant international tournaments like the 2019 FIFA Women's World Cup in France, the 2020 Olympic Games in Tokyo, the 2022 AFC Women's Asian Cup, as well as the 2023 FIFA Women's World Cup, which Australia is bidding to host. Now, on that note, also this week, the Matildas did receive their Tournament of Nations fixture and schedule, as they will be looking to defend their title, having won it in the inaugural year. The Matildas will open their campaign against Brazil on Friday the 27th of July. Now, that's Australian time, at Children's Mercy Park in Kansas City. Australia will then head to Connecticut to meet the United States at Pratt & Whitney Stadium on Monday the 30th of July, 9 a.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time, before the team round out their campaign against Japan at Tokyo Park in Illinois on Friday the 3rd of August. Now, all of those three games will be live on Fox Sports. Well, looking to the weekend, the FA Cup final is on, Chelsea against Manchester United. Here's Chelsea's Cesc Fabregas and Thibaut Courtois ahead of the match.
Manager that came here in a very delicate moment, in a difficult moment for the club, and I think he did very well at that time to put everyone straight, everyone right from the off, to know that he came here to win. He changed many things, and we've been working on these things basically every single game, every single move that you see us doing on the pitch. We do it every day, basically, so we know how he wants us to play, and he wants us to play this way, and we have to just make it happen on Saturday to achieve the victory, because if we believe, I think we can do it.
Yeah, I think almost everybody is the same here in the dressing room, so we have a big motivation to win, and especially as well that we don't have a trophy this season, so we want to win. I think finals are always 50-50. Obviously, Manchester, I think they're in second this season, so maybe in terms of Premier League they were on a higher than not than us. I think Cup is a different competition. I think finals are always 50-50. Last year we were the clear favourite to win it and we lost, so I think in a final everything can happen from a day, you know, how you turn up, and I hope you turn up the right way.
This is the week that was, and that was Thibaut Courtois. The FA Cup final will be played on the turf of Wembley Stadium on Sunday from 2:15 Australian Eastern Standard Time. Now, there doesn't seem to be too many injury concerns for Manchester United. Romelu Lukaku, Marouane Fellaini and Anthony Martial will be fit enough to be involved. As for Chelsea, Danny Drinkwater is ruled out with a calf strain, while David Luiz can't shake his knee injury, so he will be missing it. Moving on, earlier in the week we also heard that Sydney FC unveiled their new head coach, Hall of Fame member and 2010 A-League double winning captain Steve Corica. Scott Barlow, Sydney FC's chairman, announced it.
At the Sydney Opera House to announce Steve Corica as Sydney FC's new A-League head coach. This appointment brings to an end what has been an extensive recruitment process. We interviewed a short list of candidates from around the world, in fact, a number of outstanding candidates, but it was clear to myself and to the other members of the Sydney FC board that Steve was the right man for the job and the right man to take us forward. Steve has been with us at Sydney FC from day one as a player, a captain, youth coach, assistant coach, and now as our club's head coach. He knows what it means to be part of our great club. And Steve has played a central role in our many A-League achievements in recent seasons. He's proven himself to be an outstanding coach, and he is now well and truly ready to take on this role. Importantly, Steve's appointment provides our club with a level of continuity, a consistency of approach, as we look to build on our successful foundations. But also, Steve will be expected to make adjustments where necessary to put his stamp on the role, and we know that he will do exactly that. Today, as we look across the A-League, it's fantastic to see that there are a number of young, modern football coaches, Australian football coaches, applying their trade and making their mark in the A-League. And we have every confidence that as the head coach of Sydney FC, Steve will now prove himself to be a leader amongst this group. Steve, On behalf of everyone at Sydney FC, congratulations on this appointment. We look forward to continuing to work with you and to drive our club forward and deliver more success and more titles to our members and fans. Thank you.
Sydney FC's chairman Scott Barlow announcing Sydney FC's assistant coach Steve Corica as head coach of the club to succeed Graham Arnold. Well, that's all I've got time for today. Do not miss Gianluigi Buffon's last match for Juventus on Saturday night at 11 p.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time. And you can also sit down and watch the FA Cup final, which is also on, Chelsea against Manchester United. Well, this has been The Week That Was with Louise Taffer. Have a great weekend. Thanks for your company.
You just cannot write scripts like this.
FNR News with Louise Taffer on FNR, Football Nation Radio.